you probably could tell by the extensive nature of the outline. It's fully packed of good things. I don't have the attachments on mine. I think maybe I do. I know we put a couple attachments on it. One attachment. Okay, list of questions. Yeah, good. So that's on there. Okay, so we do have that one. Good. So let's jump in. I finally remember when we talked about the Association of Professional Network Marketers Convention, and Dr. Steve Taubman was part of Sunday morning, and I really enjoyed what he did, and he was working with the crowd, and I saw myself getting trapped into, you know, into my thought processes in terms of, he did a couple of, you know, experiential things, and it was pretty fascinating to see myself get trapped, because it was, you know, you think you're really bright and you have this perception of self and it gets blown up right in front of your face, and so you go, okay, that's cool. How did he get me to do that thing, you know? And you can see how our trained conscious takes over. And so when he talked about his book and his material and his concept of unhypnosis, it was fascinating to me, because it was fascinating that we could potentially break down the roadblocks in our conscious to allow us to free up from all this stuff that's been, you know, programmed in us over the years. And the reason I was most interested in this, too, is the fact that one of the most powerful events in my life was when I went through some of the Clemmer work early on in my Manatech experience.
Lydia,
so,
are you recording this, please?
Yes, it is recorded. Yeah, Lydia, you got it recorded, right?
Yeah,
she's got it. I heard it. Thanks.
I didn't hear. I beg your pardon.
That's okay. Thanks for reminding. I always appreciate that. Yeah. So what happens is that, you know, my background with the Clemmer work was so significant, because I went through the first Champions workshop with them, and there were some things that were highlighted in my life that were just the most blatant ones. And, of course, we're like an onion, and some of the things that are most blatant are on the outside of that onion. But, you know, I just started at Personal Mastery with peeling back some of those major, you know, programs that were running my life, like belief systems about myself that were just things that I'd put into my head, like that was me, when it really wasn't me. It was just a choice. I didn't understand that we make choices about ourselves. And, you know, it's the things you don't know that are really sometimes the most harmful things in your life. And I didn't know it was a choice. One of the things was I was competitive. I just thought, well, that's how I am. You know, every one of you knows competitive people, and some are more competitive than others. And competitive for me was very beneficial in many ways. It made me great in school. It made me great in sports. It got me to the, you know, not only high school basketball team, but college basketball team. And so, I mean, it was very helpful in many ways. But did it pay off in every way? Of course not. It was very harmful in relationships with people. It was harmful. I couldn't go out and play a game of racquetball with somebody out without, you know, getting in a fight or, you know, somehow disturbing the core relationship that we had built, because I had to win, right? And I couldn't go home at Christmas time and play games with family because I had to win. So there were a lot of issues that arose because of my severe case of competitiveness, and I never recognized it as anything except being who I am. And when you think it's who you are, you think it's unchangeable. So you just accept the fact that that just happens to be who you are. God created me as competitive. Well, through understanding that this was just some programming in my life, and you don't even have to find out what created the program, but to acknowledge that it's just a choice you're making, and you can make a choice not to be, wow, that was incredibly impactful. Need to be right was another one. I mean, I could go on and confess to all of you of all the natures in my character that were hurting me. It might have made me great in a courtroom, but not even that, because that can even what it does is it binds you from being most effective. Does that make sense? So even though it can serve you, it still stops you from being most effective. And our goal in our life should be, how can we be the most effective we can in everything that we are attempting to achieve, whether it's, you know, our ability to go out and lead people to Christ, if that happens to be your ilk, or if it's our ability to be a great network marketer, or our ability to be a great wife or a great, you know, grandmother or mother, or, you know, a great community leader or somebody that's inspiring, and a tractor factor in this world, all these things that we might put on our list of, this is my wannabes, this is what I really would love to be. How do I be the best I can be? Well, that's what we want to do, break down all the things that hold us back from doing that. Because all of you on this call today, I believe you're on this call because you want to be great at network marketing. Now, that's a good question just in and of itself, because some of you, when I said the words network marketing, you kind of felt a little cringe perhaps. And I want you to say aha to that and say, because that right away tells me that you already have a belief system that's going to sabotage you. So what do we need to do? We need to overcome the belief around what is it that you have as your belief system around network marketing. And how do I overcome that? You follow me? If you want to be good at this, you need to love what you're doing and honor it and respect it. Because if you don't, you are going to self-sabotage. So write that down as one of your aha moments of, you know what, I need to overcome this. And get some good help to do it. And that's what I'm talking about, you know, the concept of what do we have in our belief system, what do we have in our subconscious, which is what really controls all our decisions. That's holding us back from moving forward. So when we look at Dr. Steve Taubman, when he came across, you know, as he did, and he talked about how we can reprogram ourselves, how we can get rid of the things that are, you know, the concepts that are ineffective in our belief system. That don't make yourself right and wrong about this, people, because you don't want to paint black and white pictures here. This isn't about, you know, Christianity. It's about things that have, our life and our walks and things that have masked what, you know, who we are. And it robbed us of being the greatness that God created us. And it is about Christianity or whatever your belief is in your, you know, in your walk, your faith. But it is about us all being, you know, made in the image of God. And thus, we have unlimited capacity. Unlimited capacity. If you believe the Bible. But so what limits us? Is we do. We limit ourselves. So what Steve Taubman's talking about is that, you know, you can go through, like I did, 2.5 years of doing Clemmer work and then continuous work on myself every day, every month, every year, doing, whether it's facilitating Clemmer courses or reading other books or going to other self-development things to continue to grow and to become more and more, quote-unquote, enlightened or, you know, what should I say? Just getting more into a position where I can be more of my true self every day and be the kind of person that I choose to be instead of looking at it like this is how I am, right? And it's how do I move forward? And he's talked about how can we move forward in a very short period of time instead of feeling like this is a process that's going to take. And I'm not saying that the rest of the process doesn't take forever, but he has the ability through his concept of unhypnosis to help people move forward in a very quick period of time, to knock down some of these barriers and replace them with the right kind of belief system to support you moving ahead. So it fascinated me. I bought his books. I bought his book and his tape, and those came in on, was it Friday, Lydia? Yeah, it was Saturday. I knew it was just recently because when Lydia said, when we were talking about what to do on Monday call, and all of a sudden she goes, well, you know, the book came in, and I go, oh, my gosh, when did that happen? So it's just over the weekend. So Sunday, my Easter day, which I really wasn't planning on spending a lot of time doing this kind of work, but I did because I know a lot of you had requested that I review it when it came through. So I read his book. I listened to part of his tape, and I'm going to present that today about Dr. Steve Taubman and what he suggests. So let's talk. Are we not all in a state of hypnosis? Because why does he call it unhypnosis? And here's how he ties it in. You know, we're all programmed from birth. What if we are all hypnotized, stuck behind the invisible walls that exist only in our minds? Could we potentially have a misunderstanding of the facts? And that's true. We all do because we all have been built by our surroundings. Our environment built us. And if we are built with a misunderstanding of the facts, and many of you are going, well, I don't have a misunderstanding of the facts. Well, I'm going to suggest that all of us do. I don't care who you are, because people cast their own judgments and beliefs and everything else upon us, so we don't even recognize that because it was a part of us since we were 3 and 4 and 5 years old. So we think it's accurate because that's what was given to us, but maybe there isn't a total amount of accuracy to what was given to us because we haven't gone back and reexamined it to see what it really is. So how can we see through the illusion to the limitless potential that awaits us? In his CD, he has a CD, which I'm in the process of going through. I did the book first because I wanted to get prepared for the call. But his CD is also really terrific. It's called Unhypnosis for Direct Sellers, Network Marketers, and Entrepreneurs. And he says the number one breakthrough subconscious success system for eliminating mental barriers to taking action. And I think that's very accurate. And his CD cover on the backside of his CD cover, it says, how fast would you build your downline if you had the same mindset as a network marketing millionaire? That's a great question. And that's what I want to ask yourself. How fast would you build your downline if you had the same mindset as a network marketing millionaire? Now, immediately, some of you are going, well, I don't want to have that mindset. And I go, okay. So you don't want to have unlimited wealth that would allow you to do unlimited things for whatever you feel driven to do. Okay, so where is that belief system coming from? See, right away it unveils to us, immediately your response to that is showing a limitation somewhere in your belief system. Like someone told you money was bad, or somebody told you pursuit of money was bad. All these things are intriguing. I mean, I pursue money. I don't chase money. I pursue doing things that are of value to people and look for monetary rewards so I can help create a better world. That's what I'm here to do. And I feel so led in so many directions in that area. But everybody's different. If you feel like some people tell me, well, Mary Jo, I don't want to go after money because I don't trust myself. And I go, wow. So where does that lack of trust of yourself, of utilizing and maximizing best use with the funds that you have? Because the last time you inherited $10,000, you blew it. So now you don't trust yourself. So somehow that made you untrustworthy. So you built that in your belief system, and now your core belief is stopping you from ever being financially successful. How crazy is that? And if I look at myself and I say, oh, say, so Mary Jo, she's made a lot of money in her life, and but did I make some mistakes with the money I had? Absolutely. We all make mistakes because, you know, we're not born with the 100% aptitude to know what to do with money when we get it. But we should never deny ourselves a desire to have more money just because we failed at it one time or twice. Because why can't we learn to be more proficient with it? And that's what I've done, just like everybody I know. So we don't come out of the womb being proficient in managing money, do we? No. In fact, most millionaires were broke at some time in their life. And some of them have been broke and become millionaires and broken millionaires over and over again. They still haven't learned, right? No, it's really that they don't perceive risk. They're risk takers, which gets them their millions, but then they take other risks that lose their millions, but then they know they're going to take another risk that'll make a million. So just a part of their process. But some of us become more conservative with our funds so that we can produce long-term income streams, residual streams that can allow us to feed us for years. But again, how fast would you build your downline if you had the same mindset as MLM millionaire? And that's what I want you to think about, because that's how what he's trying to do is help us reprogram ourselves and get rid of the programs or the belief systems that were built in our lives at a time when we didn't have much control over it. We didn't make choice at the time. So what does it mean to be hypnotized? Well, he says the reason he calls his book Unhypnosis is because he believes we inherently are all, quote-unquote, hypnotized. Our conscious versus unconscious. Of course, we understand our conscious is our awareness. It's our thinking mind. Our subconscious is below awareness, but it controls almost every bit of our behavior. In fact, Brian Clemmer says 98% of our decisions we don't make. They're made for us by our subconscious. So we're still making them, but we're not making them from the thinking mind. We're making them from the subconscious mind. So even though when somebody asks you a question, you say a response to it, you didn't have to think about it because it wasn't part of the thinking process that determined it. It went right to your subconscious. And we respond that way in almost everything that we do. The process by which all these thoughts came into our subconscious is a type of hypnosis. So in other words, he looks back and he says, we were hypnotized. And it's not really a form of what you're used to hearing as the word hypnotized, but it was built, it was programmed. So the concept of unhypnosis is reprogramming to set you free from all these programs. And you can't just tell your conscious to do something else. You can't say, okay, I'm going to, you know, and we try to reprogram our conscious all the time. We read books to reprogram our conscious. We have affirmations to try to rebuild it. But our conscious mind really is not what we need to do, because we need to bypass that conscious mind to get to the real decision maker, which is our subconscious mind. So we need to somehow lull that conscious mind to sleep to work on the subconscious, right? That's how you become programmed initially, and we became programmed initially because our conscious mind, when you're one, this is why almost all our programs are developed between the ages of 0 and 8 years old. Did you know that? In fact, the majority is 0 and 4 years old. Why would that be the most likely time to be programmed in our subconscious? Because our conscious mind doesn't have enough experiences to even think through, is this right or wrong? Do I agree with this or disagree with it? When you're 2 years old, whatever mom and dad says, man, that's awesome. We eat all that up. It just becomes layered in our foundation of our programs. It becomes our subconscious because we have no real, we don't have a filter to filter it. So it comes right in. So it's like we were, he looks at that as a process of hypnosis that we go through. So, and cultural hypnosis takes a stranglehold on us as well. We get hypnotized by things around us in our culture. It's a condition of being conditioned. So if we're entrapped by our unconscious adherence to some illusion, it is our conscious recognition of the fact that will ultimately set us free. So we need to get a conscious recognition of what's trapping us in our unconscious. And he talks about, so that's his concept of unhypnosis. It's about taking us from a existing state that we all are in, which is, he uses the word hypnosis. I use the word programmed, right? I believe we're significantly programmed in our life. We have all this tremendous amount of programming in our subconscious, which makes 98% of our decisions in our life. And until we awaken ourselves to what's there and how incongruent it is with what really life is, we're going to stay stuck. And those are feelings of lack of worth. You know, a lot of us walk around on earth and we think we're not worthy. When, if you're a Christian, Jesus Christ's death on the cross made you worthy, right? So how can you be unworthy? But we heard that as a child. We heard it in church, or we heard it somewhere, and we grabbed onto it instead of taking it to its ultimate meaning, that he gave us this life and a life to have abundantly, John 10:10. I mean, if anything's possible through him, right? Exactly. We understand, but we don't read certain scriptures. We want to misinterpret those so that they make us feel tremendously humble and we're not worthy and we're just servants and we're not creators, even though we're created in God's likeness, and God was the greatest creator of all. And so we are all individual creators, but we deny certain things because it doesn't fit within our programs that we've been programmed to tell us that we're unworthy, or that that all we need is just enough to get by, or we need to, you know, live a life of poverty like Jesus did, or quote unquote, or whatever. I mean, we have all these programs that are keeping us stuck and not allowing us to be as effective as we can be. So he says in his book, he says this, and I took it out of the chapter in his book because I thought it was so powerful. He said, this book will change your life, guaranteed. Isn't this fascinating? This book will change your life, guaranteed, if you follow the steps laid out and take the time to ponder the deeper questions raised. You will grow. And what's fascinating about his book, which I love so much, and of course I haven't been able to do it all because I had one day to review this and get it in your hands, but at the end of every chapter, he has important points, and then he puts in there exercises for you to do. And of course, everybody can go and visit www.unhypnosis.com for more ideas, tips, gifts, and resources about discovering your life, right, and more about you. But I think the book is critically important as a learning device, and I think if you go through all the exercises, I started to, but I realized that it would take me 5 days to review it, and I wouldn't be ready for Monday's call. So, but it's great, and I will go back and do them, and I already have my notebook. I set aside a bound notebook just specifically for this book. So he talked about choosing to do a do-over. Many of you saw the movie Billy Crystal was in called City Slickers, and it's a do-over. Here's a guy, he's living a life, he's pretty miserable, he's not really happy in his life, he's caught up in a day routine, and he goes out on a cattle ranch and he has these phenomenal experiences in life that just all of a sudden totally change his life. And he can go walk back into his life that's existed before, and he has a total do-over. And that's what he's saying about us. We have an opportunity to have a do-over. No matter where you are in life, no matter how many years behind you, no matter if you're 80 years old or 20 years old or 50 years old, it doesn't matter your age, you have an opportunity to have a do-over. You have an opportunity to shift and see life differently. And he does talk about ambiguity as part of the game, and we live with ambiguity every day of our life, so that's just something that we're gonna accept, not try to spend our life confused and unresolved, but allow us to have ambiguity exist in this world. Before getting started, he suggested that everybody do an inventory on your life, and what I did is at the last page of the outline, I put forth this questions that he had in his book. Because I'm kind of leading you down a path of step one. And so I put the questions that he set forth in that review of your life as your opening inventory. So that's kind of like step one. Your success will be proportionate to the extent you take responsibility for where your life is today. And I absolutely believe that's it's biblically sound, it's truthful across the board. We have to stand up and say, this is where we are today, and I'm responsible for where I am today. That doesn't mean to go into glum. It just means, wow, I have that level of ability to respond or responsibility about my life. I can be responsible for a life that looks 10,000 times better as well. So take it in. The viewpoint on it isn't to go into depression. The viewpoint is it to take it and say, wow, and look at what I can create. Because you have the possibility to create where your life's going to be. And your past doesn't control your future unless you choose to allow it to do so. That's just a choice you make. And this is also highlights the fact about victims. People love to say, well, I'm not responsible for my life because this is what happened to me. And you go, right. So because you chose victim to your life instead, you've created a whole life of victimhood, which means you'll never, ever achieve what your full capacity is. You've just given up on life by choosing victim. And people do that. We're a society full of victims. And I'm sorry to say it, but I think the legal profession promoted it to the ultimate degree. When you see these law cases come down where women drive their car into the river and kill their kids, and then, you let them off because they were raped by their dad. Really? You follow? So somehow, something that happened in your past, they allowed to control their future, and so they're not responsible for their egregious acts. How many times are we going to do this with people before we finally say, enough is enough? Because all it does is promulgate the concept of choosing victimhood instead of saying, we have a choice here to make. And he talked about his own life. One of the books that he read, he was a chiropractor. He spent his money and all his parents' money, went to chiropractic school, became a chiropractor, and he found himself in his daily routine not liking his life. Now, how many of us can raise our hands? And some of you can say, well, I don't like my life. I'm in Manatech, and I don't like my life. And that's a great thing to start with. Admit that and say, okay, so what is it about this life I don't like? Maybe it's time for me to look back at the programs I'm running about what I'm doing here. And maybe network marketing isn't for you. I don't know. But maybe it's because we're not as successful as we should be because of limiting beliefs that we have. So let's work on that level first and find out if this, with the investment you've made in it, why not really do a self-examination to find out what are those things holding you back? Why not get rid of the limiting beliefs and give yourself a shot at being tremendously effective, which would be taking on a MLM millionaire mindset. And then see what happens. I suggest you'll be unbelievably successful, but it's got to be a choice you make, and it's got to be a commitment to doing that reprogramming. He got tired of all it, and he just said, I'm done. He got up and he walked out of his chiropractic practice. He left it, went down to Guatemala, and just hung out, and he started his path of enlightenment, in effect. But he read a book by Jerry Stocking, and it's called How to Win by Quitting. And I thought that was really cool. Now, that's really, I can laugh at it because, you know, I look at, you know, I quit my law practice, right, to join Manatech. A lot of you know my story. And was that not, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but I followed what God had laid on my heart. I wasn't enlightened at the time. I was enlightened by God, of course, which is my greatest enlightenment, but I wasn't enlightened about who I was or the programming in my life or the limiting beliefs I had or all the other garbage. But, you know, what a blessing that I find myself 15, 17 years later living the life of my dreams, and the 17 years of doing this business has allowed me to have time freedom that I never had practicing law, and be free from entrapment into a thought process of being killer bees and attack mode all the time instead of just loving and caring about people. I mean, the total transformation was awesome, but I won by quitting. So I'm going to try to locate that book. They say it's very hard to find, but I'm going to try to, and maybe I will do a review on that one as well, because I think there's some fascination to that. Creating the life we want is contained within five layers of consciousness. So he goes through five layers. That's the rest of the book is committed to these five layers of consciousness, which is basically the majority of the book. He talks about layer one is your essence. That's your most basic letter. That's fundamental. You, as you came into this world. And that's a concept of really working here to discover what our essence is. It's and the process of doing that is to peel back the onion, is to strip back a period of unlearning, because we've masked it with so much stuff that we didn't even necessarily were a choice around. Somebody else programmed us as a youngster, and we don't even recognize it, but we have fallen and been entrapped by those programs. Layer number two, so that's the essence of beingness of who you are. And for us Christians, it's just a fascination. I mean, we know the essence of our beingness is that we're godlike, right? I mean, Christ within. And so it's like we start with a concept of the essence of our being is this incredible goodness, this love, this charity, and then we start evaluating each step of our life and all the judgments we spew and all the stuff I was just around, I don't remember where it was, but I remember being just, I felt flogged by a group of Christians, not flogging me, but just flogged my faith, because it was just so unrepresentative of the essence of Christianity. And it was just, it breaks my heart to watch people operate that way. I was even in a phone three-way call with somebody who talked about being led by the Holy Spirit, and he was so obnoxiously prejudiced about so many things. And then he goes, oh, I'm going to just pray about it because I'm led by the Holy Spirit. And I was like, oh, wow. My heart just hurt. My heart hurt. But our essence, it's about returning to the essence. If this gentleman I was on the three-way call with, or these people I saw the other day I was working with, if they really understood essence, I think their behavior would be different. But we don't understand it. We don't grasp onto it. So it's really about stripping back the unlearning that we've done to get back to our essence of being. Layer number two, just above the essence, is our belief system. And our beliefs are, they must be empowering in order to succeed. So we have to look at what beliefs do we have that are disempowering to us. And we have to separate those. And it's about not right and wrong again. It's about effective versus ineffective. Layer three is the goals, the next level beyond beliefs, basically structuring goals in our lives, because the direct switch for wants, setting the wheels in motion to manifest our wants. For these goals are what set the wheels in motion to manifest what we desire in our life. They start with our values, our true purpose, and I always draw that diagram of if you don't get your values right, you're going to be developing unempowering goals. And if they're unempowering, they're going to be ineffective. So we must start with our value structure. And then the next level after goals is manifestation. Of course, that's learn how to manifest our desires. By exercises, you can simplify our ability to manifest beyond our dreams. And then the final one is interaction. At layer five, interaction, which is the outermost layer of consciousness, which is the one that interacts with the world around us? How do we become more effective in our interaction with the world around us? And he puts together critical points, strategies for success operate according to natural laws. There are four critical points. The second one is nature abhors a vacuum. All emptiness is going to be filled. The commitment, third one is commitment results in unforeseen miraculous results. And this is really the magic of believing and the magic of commitment. Remember, we've written these things where once you put your belief system in place and you commit to accomplishing something, it's incredible how the universe brings things to you. We've been studying this in massive books in network marketing for years, and so we all understand it. Success requires congruence at all layers of consciousness. In other words, there's got to be congruity. And this is what we always talk about between who you are as a person, your ever essence as a person, your belief systems have to align with that. Your goals need to align with your belief and your values, your core essence, right? All these things have to be in alignment. Otherwise, it won't work for you. That's why you can't set somebody else's goals for them. They have to be in alignment with their own core beliefs. So dealing with the first layer, I'll go through as much as I can. The first layer, discover your essence. Being in the moment allows other things to become very clear. And being in the moment is a hard concept for a lot of people. It's about sitting in the moment and trying to let the mind just drift away so that you are just in a state of emotion or a experience around your environment as it exists. And your thoughts will come in and out, but you'll notice how they'll eventually dissipate. But you're in the moment. And what it does is it allows us to detach from our mental thinking, our mental constructs, which is where we have so many issues going on, and allow us to just get into more internally, dig into our subconscious. In the essence, and some people, Christians call it soul, look at things that give you joy. There's a way that you try to get there. If you look at things that give you incredible joy, a laughing child, an incredible rainbow, no one taught you to love those things. It's your essence. No one taught you to love a laughing child. No one taught you to love an incredible rainbow. No one taught you, here's something for me. In fact, it came out of a coaching call this morning again. You know, when Muhammad Yunus, in his video that I love so much, when he says, if we could do so little and make people so happy, why wouldn't we do more of it? Just that statement by Muhammad Yunus, and I've heard his video 100 times. It just grabs my heart and just, it just enlightens, it just enlivens me to just go out and create monstrous things. Because it really is true about what we can do so little. Just the smile every day instead of carrying sadness around. Just the ability to reach out and touch somebody's life and be the ultimate giver. We can do so little and create so much happiness. Why wouldn't we do more of it? See, so I know that's the essence. And you know what's so much fun about this is being essence for me in my acknowledgement is the fact that when I did my core value analysis way back, I don't know now, 12, 13 years ago, that was very impactful for me. That my number one core value came up as contribution. So it's no wonder that when I hear Muhammad Yunus say that, my entire body goes into this incredible, it's like this sense of warmness, fuzziness, and it doesn't matter how many times I hear it, it gets me back to the essence of who I am. And that's what you want to find. You want to find that essence. What is it? And digging into what gives you so much joy. And you can't think your way into it because that's going to come out of your conscious. And once again, your conscious isn't where you exist. You exist in your subconscious. 98% of your decisions are made in your subconscious. And he gave a couple of scriptural passages, and I'm not going to tell you that Dr. Steve Taubman is a Christian by any means. I don't know his faith, but he does cite scripture. I think there's some misinterpretations, perhaps, to help benefit understanding in his book, so I'm highlighting that as a concept. But most of us, you know, until we've arrived, and I say until I'm in heaven, I probably will use scripture. I won't always use scripture myself perfectly because I'm not perfect. So, I do give him credit for putting a lot of scriptural passages throughout his book. And he talks about seek first the kingdom of heaven and all else will be given unto you, right? And that's that concept of, you know, our giving our life to Christ, our dedication, our you know, being, you know, no longer of the world, living in the world, but no longer of the world. So that's it is. And then the kingdom of heaven is within. So it's inside of us. So for, look inside. The path, you know, the path of finding your essence is that you can't violate basic tenets in ourselves. It must be experiential. So you're looking at a method for learning to experience yourself differently, and that's what you need to do, and that's why I love experiential trainings, and that's exactly what Clemmer work is all about, experiential training. It must be alive. Each day you should touch the essence within you. Each day we need to touch the essence within us. Don't rely on last week's nourishments, but every day. And that's why every day the givingness of my heart and the giving and doing something and reaching out and stretching out and doing things that's so crucial to my existence. It has to be practical. In other words, to reach your essence, you can't say, okay, in order to understand your essence, you need to go to a monastery for 6 months. It's not practical. It must be understandable to your conscious mind. So you don't want to create something of your essence of being that is incongruent with a conscious mind so that you have a conscious mind that's an adversary to your subconscious. So the goal is creating a spacious, quiet mind. You might begin to imagine some possibilities for yourself. And tools at your disposal is just sitting and noticing beauty, focusing on it, and drink as nourishment. Just sitting in the garden, spending that quiet time. You know how many times we talk about, and you read in books where they say, and I used to do this this is fun. You know, as a young adult, I remember I used to go out and read books about, just spending time. What do you do in your quiet time? And I go, what quiet time? Because my time was filled with chatter constantly. I was constantly on the go, all my energy level. So I spent very little quiet time. I read the Bible, but I didn't really sit like on a bench in a park and just stare at a rose. I didn't really, you know, develop all of that, and that's just a shortcoming of my life. But it's the idea of noticing the beauty, focusing on drinking it in as nourishment, stay out of your head, because what you're trying to do is lull that head, get out of the thinking pattern and get into the subconscious. When you experience extreme weather, it's intriguing. He said, you go outside and it's raining really hard and your mother would chase you back inside and tell you how it's dangerous. Don't do that. Well, you know what that did for you as a child? It built a ton of programs. So if you just allow yourself on a crazy day where they have bad weather or something, just go outside and feel the crispness of the cold or the beauty of the rain pounding against you or the refreshing nature, and just all of a sudden to become to a new realization that some of that internal programming is so wrong about the beauty of nature and what it gives us in natural weather conditions as they exist. Meditation is huge, of course. Quiet your mind, focus on how you feel, and shift out of your mind and go into meditation. The handbook to higher consciousness he brought up, he says, I welcome the opportunity, even if painful, that my moment-by-moment experience offers me to become aware of the addictions I must reprogram to be liberated from my robot-like emotional patterns. And that's exactly what we have. We are patterned in emotions. We have trigger points that cause us to raise up our ire. I had one of those on a three-way call last week where a trigger point, I mentioned Harvard University, and the guy lost it in the conversation because he was just a conservative guy, and he looks at Harvard as a bastion of liberalism and just went nuts. Well, wow. Where is that coming from? Is that your essence, or is that just a triggering emotion? Because if your essence is one of love, that's not love. So you start looking at what triggering points do we have because somebody layered belief systems on us that aren't really serving us to walk that path of love, right? And so you can disagree with, but to trigger such an adverse responsiveness is just like, wow, I'm not open to learn. I'm not open to hear. I just shut down. So then the unhypnosis and recovery from addictions, use of meditation as to re-identify ourselves correctly, not as our mind with all its erratic and inconsistent thoughts, but as our essence. So if you find yourself, we can all describe ourselves as erratic and inconsistent thoughts. We have those things that run through our head. But what about our essence? Our essence isn't inconsistent, and it's not erratic. It is what it is. It is, and that's what it is. And there's nothing erratic or inconsistent with it. So to get away from erratic and inconsistency, we need to get to our subconscious. We need to get to our essence. So he grapples with that. Second layer is clarify your beliefs, and he talks about, you know, the outer world can never be better than our inner world, and I love that. So that as your beliefs are, so are you. In fact, our outer world is a reflection of our inner world, our values, our belief, our essence. So our outer world is going to be a reflection of that. So we got to look at what are we creating in our world. If, you know, in the scripture it talks about as a man thinketh, so is he. Well, that's kind of head, but it's really talking about the subconscious. What, as a man, who we are in our heart, so are we. That's how we are come across. So we need to become that, you know, trigger that essence, work on that essence in our core values and our beliefs. If we believe we're not worthy, then we're going to create our outer world is going to treat us as unworthy. Do you follow what that happens? If we all these negative beliefs and belief patterns we have about ourselves, we just promote those every day of our lives in the outer world. We attract that. It's kind of the law of attraction factor to how you want to surround yourself with great people. You've got to step into greatness yourself because our outer world is no different than our inner world. So reprogramming is crucial to change that outer world. And our values are typically below our conscious, right? They're not our conscious state, but they're our subconscious, but they control every decision we make. Many values were given to us with no question by our parents, early life experiences. We already talked about that, how the programming occurred. We're imprisoned by these until we step out of them and evaluate them. So it doesn't mean that they're not all, don't get into good and bad. Don't get into right and wrong. Just get into effective, ineffective. And be at choice around them instead of being programmed by them. So unexamined values result in unconscious behavior. If that makes sense. It's automatic behavior. We're driven like a stick. And, you know, there are a lot of people that try to get you to exactly respond that way about life. Everywhere. Because people, especially in our you know, massively, you know, radio shows, television shows, you get programmed every day. When you listen to the same thing over and over again, it programs you. When you listen to all that stuff that's out there, the chatter, it programs you. And then you become an unconscious behavioralist. And then you start not liking yourself because of what you're creating. I'll guarantee you in this three-way call I did last week, by the time we're at the end of the call, I think the gentleman was embarrassed by his behavior in the call. But it was like it was unconscious behavior. He's so programmed to respond the way he did, and it's so ugly, yet that's what he's programmed to do. But a perfect example of what we're talking about here. But it happens a lot. And you can look at it yourself and say, where haven't I liked myself? And maybe you even liked yourself, so maybe you even have more work to do. I go back and go, wow, let's go back and look at that and say, is that the way I want to be? Finding your values, Brian Tracy has a three-step process he outlines in the book. We don't have time to go over it today, but just know that he's got a great process of trying to do that. I gave you guys a value exercise as well. There are a lot of them out there, but you want to do that. Positive values plus diligent adherence in outer behavior equals inner peace. That's a great quote out of the book as well. And then our belief system, of course, Napoleon Hill gave us Think and Grow Rich, and he said, what's the one common denominator about all the multimillionaires that he studied for 20 years? It's they believe no matter what happened, they were going to be successful. And a lot of us don't carry that belief. I carry that belief because I believe in John 10:10. I'm going to be successful. The Lord wants me to have success. He's laid on my heart. He's not going to lay on my heart all these goals of building, you know, a bunch of churches in Brazil and expanding P70 to other continents and all this stuff if he doesn't have a concept of abundance somewhere in my life, right? It's abundant. It's abundant thinking requiring abundance. And so I go out, and there's many ways of achieving abundance other than self-achievement, but I know that's what he has in store because he's given me this concept of what he wants me to do in my life, and I believe that's what he does for all of us. We shut down sometimes what he is speaking to us about because we go, oh, I can't see a way of doing that, and we dismiss it instead of accepting it. And that's where we cut ourselves short. So we need to have belief. And most of us have been heaped with this empowering, cumbersome, and false beliefs about ourselves and the world around us. Then we make our beliefs into our own realities. So we need to go through a process he calls reframing. Look at any situation that is challenging and choose a resourceful interpretation of them. Reframing what our beliefs are. And there's a whole process in the book around reframing that helps. That's helpful. The third layer is identify your goals. He talked about burnout doesn't come from lack of time. It comes from lack of purpose. I totally agree. And that's what I always tell people. When people say, oh, I don't have time to do it, I said, what do you mean you don't have time to do it? Do you have time? You have time to do anything that's within your priority. And they go, okay. So don't ever, ever use the words, I don't have time. I try to cut that out of people's vocabulary. So when somebody suggests something to you and you go, I just don't have time to do it, instead of saying that, say, that's not a priority of mine. It will change your life. That, just that step itself will change your life. So when you're at church on Sunday and they say, oh, you know, on Tuesday night we got this going on, and you go, well, I'm so busy, I just don't have time to do it. Change your life and go, you know what, Lord, that's not a priority of mine. And see how that changes your life. Be honest with yourself. I don't have time. It's not really a lie. It's just restatement to make you feel better about not doing something. But it could be exactly the thing you need to do in your life to totally move yourself forward. But because you're listing it as just, it's easy to dismiss by saying, I don't have time. So don't use that. Just say it's not a priority and watch what happens. In all things in life and pertaining to your life itself, know your purpose. In other words, find the link between everything you're doing today and your purpose. When you can link everything you do every day to your purpose, wow. And that doesn't mean that, you know, free time that you could decide to read a crazy book or you watch a little TV that you have to link it to your purpose. It's just, you know, if you're working 8 to 5, make sure everything you're doing every day is like, is this tied directly to my purpose? And then things will become so easy for you. You won't have hardships doing them because they're in alignment with purpose. So you'll commit activities that are in alignment with purpose. That's what happens to us in network marketing. A lot of us get confused and we get off on tangents on doing different things that aren't in alignment with our purpose. And then what happens is, guess what? We lose interest in network marketing or we claim it doesn't work. Well, it's because you got caught up in a ton of activities that aren't in alignment with your purpose. Always express your unique gift. We all have something to be heard, our voices, and they need to be heard. If you dream it, you can do it. So dare to dream, dare to imagine a different future. Dare to Dream, it also is a great book out there if you care to read it. Goal-setting technology, he uses the Cougar method, and I just outlined in that. You can run through that. I'm not going to spend the time to it, but it has to do with, you know, creating the idea generation process, organizing it, unblocking stage, looking at obstacles and finding solutions for it. The group phase, so you have brainstorming and you have people that are committed to, you know, support system for you. An action phase, you start taking actions. And then the relaxation phase, which is really a phase he says applies to every phase. Be relaxed as you go through it. But I liked it. It's a new way of looking at goal setting. So it might be something I take on at the end of this year and do in our goal setting as well, because I do that, those exercises in December every year. And he says prosperity consciousness thinks of giving goals, not just getting goals. So many of us just think about getting. Let me go quickly. We have a couple minutes left. For the fourth layer is manifest miracles. Goal setting is placing the order with the universe, and manifestation is the layer of receiving. I like this formula, consciousness and integrity equals speed of manifestation. So being conscious of it. He built 12 rules of manifestation. Again, we don't have time to run through those, but problem with positive thinking is too many times it's layered on top of lots of negative thinking. So the power of positive thinking is great, but the problem is you have 7 tiers of negative thinking underneath it. It's not going to serve you. And that's why it's not working for some of you. And that's why sometimes affirmations aren't necessarily a very effective tool for some people, because there's so many layers of negative thinking and subconscious that need to be tackled first. Because it's like reprogramming from affirmation takes a lot of time. In fact, they say 60 to 90 days to replace a bad habit with a good habit. And then if there's 7 other layers of negative thinking underneath it, it's almost impossible to replace. So you can raise your hand and say, you know, Mary Jo, that explains why it's not working for me. Checklist to manifest your desires. He put a checklist here. I put them in here. You can read through those for yourself. to know that what it takes to manifest that the commitment you make, your goals you set. We're capable of infinite creativity, infinite joy, infinite love, and infinite compassion. Imagine if we actually claimed those gifts and used them. I loved that quote. Highlight that, put that on the top of your computer. Plaster that on your wall. We are capable of infinite creativity, infinite joy, infinite love, and infinite compassion. Imagine if we actually claim those gifts and use them. And how do I know that that's true? Because we're created in the image of God. So infinite creativity, infinite joy, infinite love, infinite compassion are all part of it. And the intriguing thing is the majority of these are fruits of the Spirit, aren't they? Yeah. Fifth layer, interaction. Viktor Frankl, he gave a Viktor Frankl quote. I don't even know if that's in your outline. Okay, and I was going to read it to you. Let me get that for you, because we love Viktor Frankl. I love his book. And here's what Viktor Frankl said. A man who becomes conscious of the responsibility he bears toward a human being who affectionately awaits for him or to an unfinished work will never be able to throw away his life. He knows the why for his existence and will be able to bear almost any how. That is very powerful. And I'll send that quote out to you guys if you want it. It's in the outline? Oh, good. She actually put it in, typed it in the outline. Sorry, that's great. I just thought it's awesome. It's just one of those other, so many great quotes. We give by example and compassion, the art of astonishment. Our idea of what is real and true is rarely questioned. So this is what's really so cool about astonishment. When you get astonished by something, it's like a revelation to you that there's something greater out there. Get astonished by something, and all of a sudden it busts through some of your barriers of your limited thinking. So the art of astonishment is really a critical art because it opens up to you the possibilities of thinking, hey, I am limited. I am very limited. Right? Because that inner dialogue we have is so strong and pervasive that it forms kind of a barrier between us and the world. So we only get to see what's the picture that we've painted. And that's the importance of this concept of astonishment. It busts us out of what we painted in our limited thinking. So try to become an unlimited thinker. And astonishment puts you on that path. Listen to all with intent to give others the belief in anything is possible. This is about when you're interacting with people, always open up their hearts to the ultimate statement of anything is possible. Right? Communication is an organic process, requires a giver and receiver, and a lot of times we sit back and we fail to listen, we fail to allow someone to give, because we need to be great listeners because they want to give to us. So create the space that you want people to fill, so allow them to be great givers. If you're just always giving, 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 giving yourself, you're not opening yourself out to be a receiver. So there's got to be that balance there, and I was horrific at this. I was a terrible receiver. And I was told that my entire life until finally, you know, a number of years back, I was like, I'm tired of being told that. It's time for me to step into being a great receiver, to allow people to give to me. And it has really shifted my life with a lot of people. So it's important that we recognize that. And he said, commit to rare qualities that make us most desirable to others. And he listed those: reliability, accountability, responsibility, and empathy. Four critical qualities we want to put in support. Rare qualities and make us so desirable to others. If we develop that, our interconnectedness will be off the chart. Work on those four characteristics. Show your work, and that's about just being out there with a concept that you're willing to show, you know, what does it take to do things? What is it, you know, what is your commitment to things? He gave an example in the book. Let me see if I can find it for you. That showing your work as it pertains to listening support means letting people in on your thinking process. There's a big difference in terms of the support you'll receive between saying to someone, I need to borrow $1,000 for a trip to Guatemala. That's one request you can make of somebody. Or you can say, One of the things that will feel rewarding to me is working in a small indigenous village in Central America helping the natives with their health and sanitation needs. A lot of people are concerned about safety in that part of the world, so I've done some research online to find out where the safest places are that are still in need of help. Guatemala has many villages crying out for help, and it's completely safe. My plan is to spend 6 months working on my language skills and then to fly to Guatemala City, where I'll be met and taken to the town of Chichicastenango to work for 6 months. The only obstacle I'm facing now is finding the funds for my flight. What a difference. Do you get the difference? So share your heart in your work you're doing. And what an effective way of fundraising versus I need to borrow $1,000 for a trip to Guatemala. In fact, this chapter alone I'm using on Sunday, we're having a meeting, a mission meeting of all the people going to Brazil this year, and I'm going to read this to them and see if they can't rephrase their languaging in getting support to get them to Brazil this summer. Share with care, and of course people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? So it's important to be, you know, work with people about how much you care about them and treat them as semi-fragile. Don't put in any words of discouragement or you'll create that in their lives. You'll chase them away as well. And take care of your outer presentation. That's I put in there as well as his last point. And that's about just first impression is huge with people. So when you're out in public and things, make sure that you're giving your best impression. So that's it, people. Unhypnosis. Terrific book. I hope you enjoyed today's call. There's a lot of meat in this book. You can review the outline and re-listen to the call, but it's about us really working on self, and perhaps what I'll do is put some of the exercises together for people who want to pursue more of this, because it's just, to me, it's what's holding us back. It's a consistent thing that no matter how hard we work, because we've all been exposed to, you know, what have we been exposed to? The skill set it takes to do Manatech, the mindset it takes to do Manatech. We've been exposed to great leaders in Manatech who've achieved massive things. But change is hard. In fact, it's almost impossible. It's not a skill or an effort. It's really what he explains it as is a neurology. And we live with blind spots and don't even know we have them. And it keeps us stuck. So, you know, to break loose from that, we need to take action. And that action is about a greater awareness of our consciousness and then opening up to hear our subconscious and understanding the essence of who we are and then rebuilding what are those limiting beliefs we have and how do we dispose of them? How do we get rid of those things that have been put in our subconscious from a child, from an experience, because it's not always from childhood. It happens throughout our life. In fact, we continue to build it. When you listen to radio shows that are negative and derogatory, you're feeding your subconscious, and you're creating a lot of judgment that maybe isn't really expressive of who you are, but it's who you've become. And so what a shift we need to make, right? Yeah, great. Okay, people, any questions, any comments?
Mary Jo, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. This is Martha in Oklahoma, and Dr. Caroline Leaf is a Christian brain scientist.
Uh-huh.
She has been on many television programs, and she has a 21-day detox, brain detox program where she gets into the nitty-gritty beyond maybe what this author has described, and it's
uh-huh.
from a Christian standpoint.
Great.
And, so they can Google Dr. Caroline Leaf, L-E-A-F. And,
great. Thank
it's like
you.
$29 a year, you can go and do her, it's like 7 to 10 minute program every day after the first one's like maybe an hour by the time you read everything.
Uh-huh.
You work on the issues that you have.
Right.
And she talks about how there's a toxic tree, and the more you work on it, the tree fades and breaks down, and you build a new tree in your brain.
Yeah.
She gets, it's really great.
Good. I love it. Great. I love it. I'll look at it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that insight. And by the way, Doctor, the other thing about the unhypnosis is he's got a tape CD that's only about an hour long that takes you actually through some of this breakouts too. So for people that want more than a book or would like to listen to something, that's available as well. But I haven't done it yet, so I'll give you feedback on that next week because I plan on doing the CD this week. Okay. But thanks, Dr. Carolyn Lee. At least I'll definitely look her up because I love a Christian-based program.
Okay, you're welcome, and thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, everybody. Great, great, great. So let's move forward. Let's see, grab onto the greatness in each one of you because you are all great. You have greatness in front of you. You have greatness in store in Manatech and in other areas of your life. It's just about resolving some of those limiting beliefs that we have and moving forward. And as Dr. Steve Taubman describes it, it's about getting rid of the hypnosis that we've been in for years because of the programming that's done to our lives. So love you all. Have a great week, and we'll talk again next Monday.